It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, the ladies' man, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How you doing, man?
What's going on, guys? And all the ladies out there in listener land.
Yeah, with your glass of Cavatier.
My glass of Cavatier, baby.
All right, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
Not a whole lot, guys.
I have to say that we've got a lot of stuff to talk about and just a little bit of time. But by the way, guys, did you see that our very own Greenville, North Carolina, made it in the top 12 for best college towns in America, according to USA Today? That's not something David's making up, or Kyle, or Bubba. And we made number 12 out of 30. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, they listed the top 30 college towns, and Greenville was ranked 12th. So that's good. Greenville does revolve around the university, and the town's got a lot to offer, so it's well-deserved.
Sounds good. And if, for those playing at home, the University of Iowa and Ames, Iowa, is number one. So if you're wondering.
Right.
So we got a lot to talk about. And, again, a little time. Bubba, we got a very special guest that we're going to get in a little bit, right?
Yeah, the second-year head coach of ECU women's soccer, Jason Hamilton. He joined us prior to last season, so it was good catching up with him again. The ladies are 2-2-1 thus far.
And they've got a big game coming up Thursday night. That's why we're putting them on the podcast, and hopefully people definitely support the program. Again, volleyball and women's soccer are free this year, so you can go out and support your Pirates. The Lady Pirates will be fantastic.
In addition to Jason Hamilton, Dave, I'm still working on getting the ghost of Bobby Hamilton, and I'll see you up here.
Bobby Hamilton, you won't leave that alone, will you?
Well, I think he'd be a great guest. If we could get the ghost of Bobby Hamilton, it'd be a great guest, and it would get a lot of, it would make a lot of waves.
All right.
Or you get his son, Bobby Hamilton Jr., if we couldn't get his ghost.
That sounds good. We'll put Bubba on that.
Well, how many people out here don't know who the hell Bobby Hamilton is?
Bubba, do you know who Bobby Hamilton is?
I remember Kyle talking about it, but no, not right off.
Really? You don't know Bobby Hamilton? Bobby Hamilton was a NASCAR driver.
Yeah, NASCAR.
Okay. I thought that was the case. I wasn't sure.
Yeah,
I've never really followed NASCAR extremely closely, but
you're in the home.
I haven't in years, but back when he was driving, I did. His son, I don't know if his son's still driving. His son was driving at one point.
All right. Well, by the way, folks, our sister podcast is Talking Racing with Mike Ray, and we'll have to ask Mike. Maybe you guys can make a guest appearance.
Yeah, wouldn't mind making a guest spot on the Mike Ray Talking Racing, and I can ask him if he knows if Bobby Hamilton Jr. is still racing.
You can actually email the show for Talking Racing, Kyle, and ask him that question so we can do that. TrMikeRay@gmail.com.
just remember the damn question, Dave. I don't send the email.
All right, guys, I'll tell you what. I was at the press conference today, recording on Tuesday night. I'm very excited about – I feel a lot better. I have to say this. I feel a lot better about our chances against Navy. I really do. And I'm really excited. We're going to have our preview on Thursday. We'll tease it a little bit. Let's talk a couple minutes about the game for Saturday. Of course, it's at 3:30 at Annapolis. We'll kind of paint the picture a little bit, tease everybody, and then we'll have our Pirate preview, right, Bubba, on Thursday.
Yep. So on Thursday, we'll catch up with Pete Medhurst, who's been on the show before. He is the play-by-play voice of the Navy midshipmen, and he also calls some Washington National games. I know he's done at least probably about 15 this year. So he's an excellent interviewer. He also has a podcast. It's college football, simple enough. So that's something to check out on iTunes.
Yeah, I've got to check that out. I haven't heard it yet.
Pete Medhurst was a great guest, and it does. Having Pete Medhurst on the show brings to mind the age-old question that if Pete and Repeat were sitting on the fence and Pete fell off, who would be left?
You're just dying to do that joke. We've heard that.
Well, who would be left?
Repeat.
I said if Pete and Repeat were sitting on the fence and Pete fell off, who would be left?
Pete.
Ah, well, okay. We'll stop it there.
Okay. Anyway. Let's talk about football. very excited. Today we had Mike Houston. I thought he did. He's really excited and fired up about the game. I know that this is a game that historically in the past we've actually been struggle with, especially the defense. But I tell you what, guys, I think with the way that the coaches have coached them up, they're putting them. It seems like even though the state loss and with the Gardner-Webb win, it seems like the defense has been in the right places where before we're like, who in the world, why are they lined up that way? Why is that guy like way over there or here or whatever? But I think that they're definitely, in order to beat Navy, as he was talking about today, you definitely have to play disciplined football.
Yeah, beating Navy is all about discipline, being gap sound, playing your position, taking care of the man in front of you. And the good thing about Coach Houston is he's ran the option at the Citadel. He ran the option at Lenore Ryan. In addition to running the option at the Citadel and Lenore Ryan, he coached at FCS and D3 or D2, I'm sorry, for many years. And at the FCS and D2 level, you see a lot of teams that run triple options. So this staff should be very familiar with trying to stop the triple option. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to be able to do it, but right. They should be able to put them in a position to do it.
Yeah, that's something I heard in an interview with Bob Trott on I guess the Brian Bailey show last night, and he was talking about one of his first coaching experiences was out at the Air Force with Bill mm-hmm. Parcells and just – the background with that offense, with the flex bone, wishbone there. It was interesting to hear what he had to say about it. And like Kyle said, and that's the biggest thing, knowing how to stop it and conveying that to players even. I mean, that's one thing because there's no doubt that they'll coach them up. But them actually transferring that to the field and putting it in practice and being able to be disciplined enough, account for the quarterback and fullback dive, and then also the pitch man, something that Holy Cross certainly had a big issue doing. It seemed like a lot of their yardage against Holy Cross was the pitch man. It was a thing of beauty watching Malcolm Perry and company run against Holy Cross, and granted, that's not the best competition, but at the same time, I've seen them do it against a lot of quality competition through the years. And when it's effective, and as it so often is, it's certainly a thing of beauty to watch. When the quarterback hangs on to it the last minute, and then as soon as that defender commits and gives it up, and the guy hits it downhill, but yeah, that's what I just think back, guys, to that 2015 game we had up there where we lost like 45-24, 45-21 Ruffins last year. Yeah. And I just remember some of our defensive backs, and they looked like they were on skates trying to take on some of those blocks on the perimeter.
Yeah, and still they were they defended it better than the previous teams had under Coach McNeil. But yeah. I just – you know, I often wonder – When you look at the triple option in general, and I understand why some schools don't run it, even though it's successful, because it does hurt recruiting. But I look at a school like Kansas that it's just impossible for them to be successful in the Big 12, and I often wonder why they don't run something like that. But you know, it seems like it would be smart for them to go with somebody that can run a triple option type offense to kind of equal things out in the Big 12 for them and their competition.
Well, that's true. And they don't have they've talked about this before, they just don't have the talent in Kansas they would have to go all
the
way. Well,
they do. K-State has done a great job over the years recruiting junior colleges.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kansas lost this week to Coastal Carolina. Coastal
12-7.
Yeah, terrible ball game. And really, and I watched some of that game and highlights, Bubba. Kansas has a couple of really talented running backs. They got one kid, I can't think of his name, it's a weird name. He's really good running back for Kansas. And they should have beat Custer. I'm just saying, part of that was they should have beat Custer.
No doubt. And they, as far as being Kansas, they have a lot of money. What troubles me about Kansas, that situation, guys, is the very fact that they have a lot of money in that athletic department. And I think if my – just go – I don't know this for a fact, but my feeling is there's certain schools we know, too, which will go unnamed. They don't care anything about football.
Well,
and they love basketball.
True, Dave. That's true. 100% true. They have a new AD who has made a commitment to football. He just got there.
Les Miles.
He hired Les Miles. But I'm telling you, what I saw that game against Coastal the other day was some bad offensive play calling, because I saw some things out of their running back that they were utilized right. They should have beat Coastal. But anyway, I don't know why we're harping on the Kansas town.
I don't know. I didn't know you love. Is this the Kansas objective or?
No. It's just
football objective. College football.
It is the sports objective. College football is a sport. Kansas does play it to some extent. but anyway, just it involved the regional team. When we were talking about Kansas running the triple option, if Les Miles don't get it done there, I don't know where you go if you're Kansas.
Yeah.
I would do something like go run the triple option. You know, I don't maybe offer Coach Ken enough money where he can't turn it down.
I thought you were going to say go FCS. I was like, well.
No, they got too much money to do that. But
I know. I thought you said go. When you said go, I thought you were going.
No, I would maybe go after Coach Ken Miamatalolo or
Munkin.
Coach Munkin up at Army.
Oh yeah.
Or Coach Fisher DeBerry there. No, not anymore. Who's he coach there for?
Troy Calhoun.
Yeah, Fisher DeBerry's retired.
Hey, they can always say, hey, Paul Johnson, wouldn't you like to come out of retirement to come out here to Lawrence, Kansas, and run the triple?
Yeah, you know, that wouldn't be a bad idea either.
You know, Coach Houston made a great point, guys. And by the way, you can always hear our – what makes this point, too, on SoundCloud, you can hear – and on YouTube, you can hear our great press conference. Well, we had the Mike Houston made a great point today, guys, when he was talking about – somebody asked him about the wishbone and the option. He said it's a successful offense. He said fans don't like it. And he brought up a great Western North Carolina guy you just mentioned, Paul Johnson. He's like, they've had more, and he made a great point I hadn't thought about before. Georgia Tech, unless you take Bobby Ross away, of course, but they've had more success under Paul Johnson, who runs that offense to a T. I mean, he runs it probably better than anybody, or just the most anybody. And they got rid of him. So Georgia Tech had great success under Paul Johnson, more success than they had under most coaches there in the last 50 years. He made a good point, but people don't – it's boring to them and they don't like it.
Well, I don't know that it's boring. Well, it ain't boring if you understand what you're watching. It's very
right.
fun to watch. But I think a lot of people – maybe your casual fan finds it boring, but – a lot of people think it hurts your recruiting, and I think it does to a point, but it doesn't matter because you just need guys who can play that offense. You need guys to fit in that system. You don't have that equals things that you don't have to get the best athletes, 4- and 5-star players. You need guys that can run that offense. And I don't know. We've never ran it in East Carolina, but
not in our day.
If Coach – you're right, right, obviously. We ran it back when Pat Dye was here. But if Coach Houston decides to change things up in a year or two and he wants to run the triple option, that wouldn't bother me.
I don't care. All I care about is winning. That's all I care about. I don't care what offense or defense. As long as it works, that's all I care about.
Yeah, I agree. What were you going to say, Bubba?
I think, Kyle, what you said is right. I mean, I agree with Coach Houston because – the casual fan, I can see why and how that would be said, and I think Coach Houston's right with the statement he made at today's press conference, is just like you said, referencing the James Madison job and their concerns.
Yeah.
But I certainly wouldn't complain if someday the Pirates are running the triple option. I don't expect to see it happen, but if we were and we're racking up 400 yards and winning championships or and just are winning 9-10 football games, huh? I'm certainly not going to be complaining. I'm going to be enjoying every second of it.
Exactly. So, I don't know about you guys, but I love to win. So I don't care whatever it takes to win. That's what, let's do it.
No, I agree 100%. And to me, it would give us that uniqueness again, kind of like we had with the Air Raid, where when you walk into a so-called Power 5 school stadium, it's something they don't see every day. And,
right.
And we would have better athletes running it than Navy typically does, just like Georgia Tech did. You know, Georgia Tech, like y'all pointed out, man, how many times did they win that division of the ACC?
Yeah, and Paul Johnson, every time they kept saying over and over again, he's going to get fired, he's going to get fired. And he survived many years on people. I mean,
yeah, if there's ever been a guy. Fired. He retired.
No, I know, but he was, I think, forced out, unfortunately.
Probably, yeah.
But I don't mean it like – it's one of those situations where he's been there a long time. He's done a lot of good. So they say, you're going to retire this year, Coach Johnson.
Yeah.
And I'm not anti-Coach Johnson. I'm just saying that's probably what they did. And it's unfortunate because I think he's one hell of a coach. I'll just say that. And I think he did a lot with more than what most coaches could do. And the offense, I think another thing is that – people don't understand because it's not something we grew up with, meaning those of us in the 30s, 40s, maybe. We didn't grow up with it. We're 10 or 20 years behind that movement, I guess, or when it was big and popular. But I think a lot of people, the reason they don't like it is they just don't understand. They're not used to – I guess they're not used to seeing the offense on a
– Oh, the reason they don't like it is because people like passing the ball. And out of the triple option, you pass on a limited basis.
Right.
That's why people don't like it.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. And I know with Navy, it's going to be a great game Saturday. I'm going to be at the racetrack, or I would love to be at that game. I love it. Bubba, I'm jealous. That's one of my – I would love to go to Army and Navy to see a game, and I hope we can do that very soon. You want to go ahead and go to our guest, Bubba?
Yeah, let's catch up with the second-year head coach of ECU Women's Soccer, and that's Jason Hamilton, and we'll talk to him right now.
Very excited now to catch up with second-year East Carolina soccer coach Jason Hamilton. Coach, welcome into the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We appreciate your time. We enjoyed catching up prior to last season, your first with the Pirates, and now I'm very excited to do so once again. Let's just talk. I know last year the program had the most success it had had in, I guess, 4 or 5 seasons with you coming in your first year at the helm. So just talk about that and where the program was headed into year two.
Yeah, I think, we had a really good first year. I think, we brought some players in that could help us right away, and we just kind of, I think, had that excitement of change that you see a lot of times with a coaching change. My fear is that we overachieved in year one, and we really tried to push that message onto the players that, hey, we haven't done anything yet, and now we're not going to surprise people. They're going to expect us to be better. And so I think, I always look at it, and I call it the year two hangover when you see, a second-year coach and who has success in the first year is can they maintain that success in year two? And, we started off a little slow at the beginning of the year. I think, we had some players who didn't do enough, and they thought, hey, we're here now and we just need to show up. And so hopefully that kind of woke them up a little bit that's not exactly what it is. And we've had some unfortunate injuries to kind of start the season, but we've got a lot of returning players, a lot of experience. And so we're excited about where we can get this thing going here. Hopefully coming off this past weekend, that'll get the ship moving in the right direction.
Yeah, before we talk about the 5 matches you guys have played so far, let's talk a little bit about that roster makeup. And you alluded to, so I know a pretty light senior class, only 4 seniors, but then you have 10 juniors, 9 sophomores, and 6 freshmen, and you have at least 7 or 8, I believe, Division I transfers. So talk a little bit about the roster makeup.
Yeah, so I think, our sport's pretty unique, where kids are committing 2-3 years out. And so for, these first 2 years that we were here, it was going to be tough for us to get players of the caliber that we were looking for. And so, we relied heavily on the transfer market, and we brought in 10 transfers over the past 2 years. Luckily, 6 or 7 of those are players that I knew in the past and had recruited in the past. So we had that relationship. And, you know, they kind of got caught up in that Power Five name school and went there, and it wasn't the experience they were expecting. And so once I was able to get this job, that if there's a place that they could see themselves at to still compete at a high level. And so we did really good in the transfer market, with those 10 players who came in and helped us. You know, last year, all six of them started for us. This year, we've got a couple of them starting for us. And so, you know, that's something that was kind of a quick fix to get players in here to be able to compete at this level right away and allow us to, you know, for our 20 class and our 21 class to then bring in players that we can have here for the long run. So it's kind of a, you know, a mixture of, you know, we've got probably about a little bit less than half of the roster who was here before we got here, but they're players who have bought into what we're trying to do and have raised their standards and the expectations with us. And then, you know, some freshmen that we were able to get pretty late once we got the job with this 19 class. And then, you know, obviously the transfers who came in and kind of were looking for that, a place to come and compete and be at a good level. So we've got a good group. We've got much more depth than we did last year, which is super important, I think, in our sport, having two games on weekends. And so that's something that's going to benefit us, I think, down the road, is we're going to have more bodies to use once we get into conference play.
Before we dive into some of the specific pieces to the, with the roster, let's talk about just soccer recruiting in general. I know you were talking about how far out players commit, and that's become so common in pretty much every sport, it seems like. But looking at the roster, I know you had probably at least six or seven from the state of North Carolina, but then all up and down the East Coast, Texas, California, Michigan. So talk a little bit about how things work and where you guys want to recruit, and then also just how it works with soccer as far as recruiting, maybe it's club soccer, what high school, what have you, and then if it's the central location, like it so often is with basketball, where you can go and watch a lot of athletes at one time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, 95% of the recruiting that we do is at the club level. And again, like you said, it's because we can go to an event and there's 200 teams there. Our sport is unique when it comes to recruiting, just because the amount of time that we're allowed to recruit, we just have a 3-week dead period. And so the rest of the year we can pretty much be out on the road. And the way the club soccer is kind of set up is it's kind of hectic and crazy. I mean, we'll go out to California to watch teams from Raleigh. So it's, you know, we get a chance to see players from all over the country. And I think with ECU having such a unique brand, we're able to get them from everywhere. Now we've got our, you know, hot spots that, you know, each coach has a lot of, you know, contacts from, or clubs that we've have good relationships with in the past, which obviously helps. But I think we're really unlimited as far as where we want to get players from. You know, over our next couple of classes, we've got kids coming from, you know, Colorado and Texas, and obviously we're trying to do as good as we can in North Carolina. I think next year you'll see with that class, we had a ton of success in the state of Virginia. So we're, you know, up and down the East Coast is going to be good for us, because I think if you just look at the student body at ECU, you got kids coming from the Northeast who want to come to North Carolina. And so we're, you know, we don't really say, hey, we're only going to go look spots, you know, in certain parts of the country. You know, we work hard as a staff, I think, on the recruiting side of things. And we're, you know, players reach out to us with interest, we're going to put eyes on them. And obviously we're going to see players that we have interest in, and we don't really hold back from where we're trying to go, because we think we have such a great thing to offer here. Facilities are phenomenal. You know, being in the American is a very good women's soccer conference. And, you know, I think there's just so much that we can offer and kind of, you know, sell compared to a lot of other schools.
Coach, a moment ago we talked about those numerous Division I transfers. One of those who you were very familiar with was Grace Duran. She had played for you at Mississippi State, and then she was a native of Dearborn, Michigan. So talk a little bit about your redshirt sophomore midfielder. I know a season ago she was an AAC all-freshman selection.
Yeah, so I've known Grace for quite a long time, being from Michigan myself, and being good friends with her coaches. She's someone who I actually had recruited when I was the head coach at Troy, and then when I made the move over to Mississippi State, she decided to come there. And then when I got this job, it was just, you know, I think she felt that you know, because we had the relationship and I was a coach that, you know, fit the style she wants to play, that it was an easy decision for her to want to come and join the program here. And so I think she had a really good year last year. You know, we worked a lot on her defending. She's a much more attacking minded player, but she was very physical and very good defensively last year, which was a big help. And then this year she started off, you know, really well in our game that got called due to weather. She scored a great goal, and then she had two goals this past weekend. So she's come a long way. We're still trying to improve things with her and you know, kind of raise her soccer IQ. But she's she's a technical player who's good on the ball. I think she's only going to get better over the next couple of years as well.
And she's someone, I know she's currently leading the team in goals, and I noticed that out of the 9 goals the Pirates have scored thus far in 5 matches, that 8 different players had scored those goals, which I found very interesting. So talk a little bit about some of the other key cogs or key pieces in your roster's makeup in addition to Grace.
Yeah, I think, it's kind of similar to last year. Is we spread the goals out last year. I think, you know, of our 25 goals, I don't know if there's anybody who had more than 4. And I think that's just who we are as a team right now. Is, you know, we don't have that one player who's going to be a 10 or 15 goal scorer like other teams do. So we're gonna have to have people step up in moments and you know, take advantage of those opportunities. So we're glad to see this early in the season that we've already got, you know, 8 people who've scored a goal, because that's what it's gonna have to be, you know, down the road. And I think, you know, getting a goal gives you that confidence. And so now, you know, hopefully those players are feeling good about themselves, and when they get those opportunities, they'll be able to take advantage of them. But I think, and obviously Jada Blaya Hilton was selected as the AAC Defensive Preseason Player of the Year. You know, we've got high expectations for her. She's a very good player, had a good year for us last year. And so, you know, it being her senior year, I think, you know, she's excited. She's made great strides, you know, within our program since we've arrived. And so we're expecting a lot from her. Mel Stiles in goal. Again, she was a big reason we had success last year, made all tournament team. You know, she's a big part of both sides of the ball. Obviously, as a goalkeeper, the biggest job is to keep the ball at the back of the net. And she's going to make one or two big saves a game to keep us, you know, in those games. And she's going to make the saves that she's supposed to, which is all we can ask for from a goalkeeper. But on the other side of it is, you know, she probably touches the ball as much as anyone, if not more than everyone on our team, just the way that we play. And having a goalkeeper that you can play back to their feet and that they're comfortable with the ball and they make good decisions is very important. And she does a really good job with that. I think Kim Sanford stepped up this year. We've been asking her to be a leader and to, you know, communicate more out there. I think she's worked really hard in the off season and she's done a great job in that back line, really kind of holding things down and being that leader that we've asked of her. Cashlyn Copley, you know, she was injured last year and came on and had some goals for us at big times in conference play at the end of the year. And to have her come in and be fit and be healthy, she looks really, really good. And so, you know, she's a player that just works hard and is going to be on the end of a lot of opportunities for us. So we expect to see goals from her. And again, we could go on. You've got Mari Sharina and we've got Jenna Dejas. Like, I think what makes us the group that we are is we don't have really any superstars, but we've got good quality players all over the field and players that can come in off the bench and be able to impact the game. And so I think, you know, as much as, yeah, we might want that 5-star player that can change a game, you know, we're happy that we have across the board consistency and quality in every position.
And Coach, let's talk a little bit about your schedule. I know you referenced a slow start, but I know, unfortunately, Hurricane Dorian wreaked some havoc with things, and fortunately, you were able to pick up a couple of matches that had not previously been on the schedule against UNC Asheville and also VMI, and you picked up a couple of shutout road wins, 5-0 at UNC Asheville and also 3-0 against VMI. So talk a little bit about those matches and then what you have coming up, because I know last year we had a 1-1 draw with NC State. So I know you have the Wolfpack coming up at Johnson Stadium. You also have several other in-state opponents like Charlotte, which is at Charlotte, and that's only about 30 minutes from me, so I hope to maybe make it out there on Sunday, depending on what my family has going on, and then also we play UNCG.
Yeah, no, we're very fortunate to be able to pick up those two games this weekend, just because of kind of where we're at as a team. We've got probably about a third of our roster out with injuries right now, and quite a few players who were in the starting lineup, so we needed those games this weekend to get some of the younger players and less experienced players on the field. I think just kind of for the ones who are healthy, a few more games, because again, we're leading into some really good opponents and we're a couple weeks away from conference play. So those games are super important just to help us prepare and clean things up. And, I thought our team did a really good job, going out there with a pretty thin roster on the road, playing Friday, Sunday, as compared to our opponents who on Sunday played Thursday, Sunday. So they had a day's rest. They were at home. A lot of things up against us, and our team responded very well. We had a slow start to the Asheville game. I think it was 1-0 at halftime. We were, had a lot of opportunities, but we just didn't have a ton of quality in front of the goal. And they came out in the second half and responded very well. That second half, probably the best half we've played all season. And then Sunday's games are tough. Whether you're home or away, that second game of the weekend is tough to kind of get yourself ready for. And, usually during the day, hot game. And so our team, again, they did a really good job of, going out and sticking to our game plan, executing our game plan. And, we had a couple great goals from Grace. And then Sophia DeMarc, who was able to get on the scoreboard, her first goal as a freshman. And I think, she's another player with a bunch of potential. So from here on out, it just gets harder. And that's what we told them, is that was a great weekend, but we've got to get better in certain areas, because Old Dominion comes in on Thursday. They're undefeated. They're playing well right now. Charlotte's undefeated. We play them on the road on Sunday. NC State's, I think, in the top 15 again this year. And so we've got some tough games coming up where they're going to be much more challenging than this past weekend was. And, hopefully we're getting some bodies back from some of the injured players. And we'll start clicking a little bit better, and it'll be good to be at home for, two out of those next three games. And then we'll get Greensboro that last Sunday before conference starts. And Greensboro's, they've won their conference tournament two of the last 3 years. They've got an experienced group, but they're in a slump right now too. And so I would expect to see them in the next 2 weeks, get back on track. And so that's going to be a good last game leading up to that conference play. And I think, the Charlotte and Greensboro game and this past weekend are really important, because we've talked about, we have to be a good road team this year. Last year we were very good at home. I think we won 9 of the 10 games at home, and we only lost one conference game at home. This year we have 5 of the 9 conference games are on the road, and so we're going to have to find a way to get results on the road, especially, having South Florida and Memphis, the two top teams in the conference, at home. That only leaves, two other opportunities at home to get those results. So we've got to find a way to go on the road and have that routine of being in a hotel and eating at restaurants and able to get results in those 5 games that we're traveling to have that opportunity to be in the conference tournament again.
Coach, early on we talked about how you won 10 games a season ago and what that can mean for the program. I know the best, and looking at the fact book, the best season ever, I believe, was in 2008 when the Pirates went 14-4-1, something like that. Just talk a little bit about what's required in order to qualify for the NCAA tournament in soccer and how the process works.
Yeah, so I think, that's a goal of ours, the NCAA tournament, as well as the, American Athletic Tournament. And our conference, we have the ability to put 4 or 5 teams in every year. So first of all, you have to be over 500. And that's, for me, that's the minimum bar that this program should ever be, is we should be a 500 team every single season. And then obviously your non-conference opponents, you have to have some teams on there that are going to have a high enough RPI to help you get that boost. And so that's, the Virginia game that we lost, and NC State coming up. Those are games that if we get results in those games, those are a huge boost for our RPI. and then just, you know, it's getting as many wins in non-conference as possible. You know, the Radford loss, thought we were the better team. You know, we didn't play well, to be honest. We didn't play well, and we still kind of led in every stat category except for goals. At the end of the day, it's not a horrible loss because, you know, last year I think their RPI, they finished 53 or 54. They're a team they're going to win 12, 13, 14 games every year. So that game doesn't necessarily hurt us. So if we can take advantage of these next four non-conference games against ODU, who's going to have a lot of wins this year, Charlotte's going to have a lot of wins this year, NC State, who's going to be a top 25 RPI, we're going to give ourselves a chance at going into conference play to you know, have that opportunity for an at-large bid. And then our conference, you know, we get plenty of opportunities to play teams with high RPIs. You know, I would expect, you know, the majority of our conference to be in the top 100, and we'll probably have four or five teams in the top 50 at some point. And so we're going to have opportunities to put a good resume together. And then if we can finish where we were last year, and if we're, you know, a 10 or 11 team win, you know, we might put ourselves in the spot to have an opportunity for that at-large bid. You know, if not, we've got to get in the conference tournament and make a run there. And, you know, if we can win our conference tournament, then that puts us in, you know, automatically. So there's, you know, there's multiple ways to get in there. And I think as a program, that's our ultimate goal. And, you know, if we do it, that's great. And if we don't, we fail. We know it's going to be a little bit of a process. And this is year two. We're still trying to teach the players how to do things that we want and create a culture that's going to be successful. And we know that there's a very bright future with the classes that we have coming in over the next couple of years.
Well, Coach, we certainly really appreciate your time and really enjoyed catching up. Tell Pirate Nation where they can follow you on social media.
Yeah, we've actually changed our handles by requests of our fans. So let me pull those up real quick. So my personal one is ECU_WSOC_coach. And that's on Twitter. Our team is now ECUSOC. So at ECUSOC on Twitter. We put a lot of information up there to follow the team, the live feed for the games, the stats if you want to follow us, and then in-game updates as well. And so we'd love to have people come out and support us this Thursday against Old Dominion, next Wednesday against NC State. Those will hopefully be two really good games, enjoyable games that the Pirate Nation come out and give us support. That'd be great.
Absolutely. And Pirate Nation, remember, that is free this year, no admission. So free entertainment. You have young kids or just enjoy watching soccer, enjoy supporting the Pirates. Definitely get out to Johnson Stadium. And like Coach said, that's on Thursday at 7 p.m. against the Old Dominion Monarchs. And Coach, we hope to catch up with you down the road later on in the season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Pirate Nation. That is ECU women's soccer coach Jason Hamilton.
Thanks very much, Coach. Loved having him on. In fact, we're getting all the fall coaches on during the year. So if you have a favorite sport, don't worry. We're going to be getting those coaches on throughout the rest of 2019. I know, guys, with one thing that when we had Julie Torbett and we had now with Jason Hamilton, we're getting coaches in now, quality coaches, that are actually rebuilding. You know, he's doing a great job rebuilding the women's soccer program. And I know that's going to take time, but certainly that's going to be awesome. And you look at Amanda Barnes at, with Kyle's favorite sport of lacrosse, and she's building the program nicely there. We'll see that in the spring. But there's a lot of great coaches. I think from top to bottom, you can't really look at a coach that we have at East Carolina. And I know I'm maybe a homer in that regard, but of the 19 sports, I mean,
always
who would
said
you say
that about you, Dave?
What's that?
I've always said that about you.
Oh, me? Okay, thank you.
You're a homer.
I'm the worst coach ever, right? Like bad news bears.
You're a homer.
Oh, I'm definitely a homer. There's no question about it. But people know that I bleed purple and gold, and no question about it. So you guys want to talk more about? We need to talk about one thing. We need to talk about is our pick'em game on Facebook. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, last week we did a guess the score contest. Had a lot of people participate, and this week Bubba wanted to expand that and do a pick'em and add some more games. So If you go to the Sports Objective Facebook page right now, we have five games to pick. You pick the winner of each of the five games, and pick the score and total points of the East Carolina Navy game. And that's going to be your tiebreaker, the total points and score. And go there now and participate, and we will have a fabulous pirate prize to give you. We don't know what it will be just yet. This past week it was an East Carolina tumbler. We're not sure what it's going to be yet this week, but
we got to look in
East Carolina related, and have a look in the prize closet.
That's what you were reading. Oh my God, that's hilarious! I was getting ready to tell you, Kyle, that you, me, and Bubba have to go to the prize closet. That's what Kelly said on the radio.
See what's available. And,
and that was not a used tumbler, by the way, folks.
No, brand new Travis tumbler, or however you say that company. Travis, is that right? The popular
Travis, right.
Travis, yeah, the popular tumbler company. Brand new. All prizes will be brand new unless otherwise noted. And if we give away something used, it will be because it's something cool, like something autographed. But otherwise, all prizes will be brand new.
It's actually Kyle's closet, the prize, aka the prize closet. Hey, baby, I actually
do have a couple of nice things in my closet that are brand new that may end up being prizes. So,
all right, that sounds like a lot of fun. I tell you, the with the games this year and with the Pirates, I think we can say definitively this year they're going to win more than three games. That's the hope. And I think there will be, when people are picking, by the time we get to the middle of October, around there, I think people will start to realize that Coach Houston is the real deal. And
now, look, if people don't know Coach Houston's the real deal, then they're just ignorant. Even if we go 3-9 again this year, it's because he did the best he could with what he had. Coach Houston's a great coach, and the season's going to play out. Let's get through this week and then move on to William & Mary. And hopefully, when all said and done, we'll you know, be around 500, maybe a little better.
Yep.
I'm hoping. We'll see.
And remember, it's the biggest game of the year, Kyle.
Well, it's the biggest game because it's the next game.
That's right. And we've got we'll take it one day at a time.
And
we need to do a whole
other
show. Can we talk a whole show, Coach Speak?
Yeah. We'll if you know, someone hungry, 1-0.
Well, guys, I know. Something else of note I saw earlier today is, of course, the highly regarded quarterback commit, Mason Garcia, from down at Carolina Forest in the Myrtle Beach area. Mason, he is selected to play in the Blue-Gray Football All-American Bowl game down at the Tampa Bay Bucks, Raymond James Stadium, of course, also the home of USF. Great news for Mason, and that will be great exposure for our program.
Yeah,
and he was actually here this past weekend. A lot of the recruits, good to see that they're already bonding, and they spent time together this weekend. A huge recruiting week. There were some that couldn't make it because of Hurricane Dorian, unfortunately, but we know they're committed, and I'm just excited about that very thing, about how well I was reading that. By the way, I got to give a shout out to our good buddy Steven Igo, Hoist the Colors. But I was reading the responses of those guys on Hoist. Steven did a nice job, as he always does, of keeping him with recruiting and talking to the guys, getting their reactions. I'm just so excited about the future. I normally don't care about recruiting, but because of Hoist the Colors, our good friend also, Mark Lindsay with PirateIllustrated.com, I've started, and the fact that we have the coaches we have with Dooley and Godwin, and also with Houston now with the Big Three Sports, it makes you excited and makes you follow the program a lot closer.
Speaking of Cliff Godwin and the baseball team, it was great to see them recognized for their regional championship and everything they accomplished this spring. I guess it was actually during the ball game, because it was going to be cool, and they waited a little bit too long to do it. They tried to do the safety dance. It was so popular at Clark McLaren Stadium this spring, but unfortunately, it was time to resume the game, and so they had to sprint off the field.
You know who sings that song, don't you, Bubba? Do you know, Kyle?
Safety Dance?
Yeah.
Not a effing clue.
1983, Men Without Hats.
Oh, yeah, men without hats. Oh, right. Yeah, I remember them. They no, I don't. hey guys, want to change the subject here? As we're recording this on September 10th, I guess we're going to release this tomorrow.
Yep.
September the 11th. 18 years ago, since that infamous day in September, 9/11. So just want to you know, make everybody aware of that. I'm sure you will be aware of that tomorrow. And, you know, kind of think about that while you're at work. Remember all the people we lost, all the Americans that were killed that day. And one of the worst days in American history. Guys, where were you at, Bubba, on 9/11? What were you doing?
I had just gotten back to my dorm room from class. So I just remember getting back. I guess I'd have had an 8 o'clock class, 8 or 9 o'clock class, and so I was getting back to my dorm room around 9 or 10 o'clock, whichever it was. And that was back when AOL Instant Messenger was still really big. And so remember my desktop, my computer screen was just covered with instant messages. Are you seeing what's going on, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, and then so I turned on the TV and then got up to speed on everything that was transpiring.
What about you, Dave?
I actually was going into teaching, so I was substitute teaching at the time, and that particular day I didn't get the call. Normally I would get a call like about every day. It was just kind of eerie that day that I guess it was meant to be for me to be at home and not be at teaching mainly at the Williamston Middle School. But anyway, I remember I had fallen back asleep, and one of my former coworkers had called me and said, "Hey, you need to, I think there's an accident. You need to turn on the television." I turned it on, and literally like 30 or 45 seconds after I turned it on, I was talking to her, a good friend of mine named Connie.
Wow,
and Connie,
I know what you're going to say. This is weird.
What?
Why you turned it on, the second plane hit the tower?
It was, oh my God, like 30 seconds later. And she and I were talking, and like and I both had like one of those, like without saying anything, it's like one of those oh my, silent, oh my God moments. I mean, it was crazy. I end up, I want to give a shout out to the North Carolina Baptist Men, something I need to get definitely active in again. But we went up there literally 5 weeks. I had to wait 5 weeks to go up there. There was such a demand for volunteers. So many people wanted to go. Make sure you give to the North Carolina Baptist Men, Salvation Army, those organizations like that, because they were up there. Red Cross, or those three organizations, give money tomorrow or today when we release this podcast, obviously being 9/11. Give back, because they were doing a lot for the firefighters, the men and women. We were literally right, guys. We were cleaning apartments right near Ground Zero. It's one of the coolest things, I would say, that if you say, what do you want to be remembered for, is being able to go up there and show those horrible people that we're the United States of America, and we'll, like Toby Keith, we're going to raise our fist at you. And it was just a very humble feeling to be there, and basically the men and women that were doing the machines of trying to clean up for 9/11 there at Ground Zero, whenever they stopped the machines, then that meant they found a body parts. And so you can go from, it's the only time in my life where I remember two or three times where we were laughing, joking around, cleaning, we were ministering to people. People had no hope up there, and we would go in there and clean apartments, and there would be times you're joking around, having a good time with your fellow brothers and sisters cleaning, and all of a sudden when that happened, you went from being happy to sad within like a roller coaster. It was just really crazy. So I was very proud. We did that two different tours of duty there. The first time was in October, about 5 weeks after, and then after Thanksgiving. I couldn't think of a better way to spend the week after Thanksgiving than to be up there and to celebrate. And certainly, and we cleaned about 600 apartments out of, I think it was about half the apartments there, and it's called the Gateway Plaza. I don't know if it's the same name, but it's literally the apartment complex right next door to Ground Zero where those towers were. And I can tell you guys, too, the other thing I remember, I'll say this real quick, it was funny how the government was saying how, oh, the air is clean. The air is clean. It's nothing wrong with the air, right? And you walk outside, right outside the apartment complex, and you're nose, throat, everything is burning from those fumes. What happened is the bottom, the basement of the second tower had a whole bunch of paint thinner stuff. And when that plane hit that second tower, there was a huge explosion and it was in the air. I mean, there's no way in the world you could say that the air was clean when you're near ground zero and your nose, your mouth, the mouth, the throat's burning. I mean, it was just from that mess. So we could do a whole podcast on 9/11, but
yeah,
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, and remind me to give my story before I pitch it to you next time. Jesus, Dave. Talk about the Trump card. I was at home also, kind of like you were, in early 20s. In fact, I was 20 or turned 21, and my mom called me for something unrelated and said, you probably want to turn on the TV. A plane hit the World Trade Center. And I said, okay, and I turned it on, and literally, just like you, almost the exact time I turned it on, the second plane hit the second tower, and
wow.
I remember calling my mom back and saying, did you see that? And she said, yes, and I said, that wasn't my accident, and she said, no, and I called my wife, who was going to college at the time. We were already married, believe it or not, and told her, you know, and she had heard about it, and ended up released. She was on the Wayne community. She hadn't transferred to East Carolina yet. And in my head, they released school at lunchtime that day. I don't know if that's accurate or if she just came home early. But anyway, it was scary times and bad memories and just what a weird time. Do you guys remember right after that, Dave? You said you went up there, obviously. Do you remember right after that with the anthrax poisonings?
Oh, yeah.
It was such a scary time, man. Felt like the whole world had changed, and in some ways it did change for forever, but in other ways things went back to normal. But for that about first month after that, it just seemed like a whole new world.
It was really, when Alan Jackson has a song, When the World Stopped Turning, on that September day.
Of course.
I remember, too, another thing I want to add, it was really weird, even though you're originally from here, Kyle, having a town of about 5,000 people. I remember that day, my dad and I went out and we were driving around, and he was upset too because of what happened. And we literally, I think we ate at Wendy's, but it was really weird where there was no traffic. We were the only car on the road. And even though it's a small town, there's still some traffic. Nobody at Walmart.
Everybody was at home watching TV, man.
Exactly. Exactly.
What I remember also is, actually, we were living in LaGrange then. We moved around several times, but we were actually living in LaGrange at that time, like we are now. And we're right by Goldsboro. Like I said, my wife at the time was going to Wayne Community College before transferring to ECU. And, Goldsboro is a military town. So all the military towns, they were on heightened alert. All the bases,
right,
were in max security mode, and because all of them were perceived targets. So it was just a weird time.
No doubt, and certainly, again, folks, make sure you go out and volunteer today. If it's 9/11 when you're listening to this, you can actually give to whatever you can give to the Red Cross or Salvation Army, North Carolina Baptist Men. The great thing about those three organizations is not only man-made like that one, but also when we had Hurricane Dorian, any kind of natural disaster, they're always there, and those are three that I highly promote because I saw firsthand. They were feeding us. But more importantly, they were feeding the police officers, the firefighters, the rescue folks that were just day after day. I can't tell you the number of police officers and firefighters, guys, I talked to, and they were putting in ridiculous amount of hours trying to protect that area. And if you, I actually have pictures, it's probably somewhere in storage, but, and the media did a nice job. I'll say this, and this is going to be my last point, I promise. I went up to the top of Gateway Plaza, as I was talking about, and the only reason I took pictures is just for historical purposes so I could show everybody. There was a four-block radius of New York City that just was gone.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll ever – I hope to God we never have that happen again. But it was just – and when I say amazing, I don't mean in a good way. When you look down and you see all that gone, I was like, oh, my God. I was literally – That was just breathtaking and not a good way. So anyway, hopefully our hearts and prayers go out to those families too that lost a loved one during that time. I can't imagine what they were going through. And I know that the kids that grew up without a mom or dad, and they had this memorial, and I'll never forget, this little girl had wrote a note to her mom, and she said something to the effect, it's about to make me cry. She said, "Mommy, I can't wait to see you in heaven." Her mom had been killed in there. Stuff like that, that you just go, I mean, unless you don't have a heart, I guess, but it's just really touching stuff, that many stories like that over and over again. But anyway, guys, do you have anything before we go?
No, that's pretty. Go ahead, Bo.
I was going to tell our listeners about some of our upcoming content. Dave referenced chatting with a lot of the Olympic coaches. And so we've already talked to Julie Torbett, and obviously we had Jason Hamilton on this podcast. We'll be catching up with Matt Jabs, who's ECU swimming and diving coach. And obviously that program has had a ton of success down through the years, and will be beginning their season here in a couple weeks. So we wanted to have Coach Jabs on. We will also be talking with Greg Steele, who's the president of Town Bank in Greenville. And with the relationship between East Carolina Athletics and Town Bank and Town Bank Tower, prior to the second game, incorporating Town Bank Tower into the game day experience, we wanted to have Greg on and see how everything went with that first ball game and so forth, and just talk a little bit about Town Bank in general and their relationship with East Carolina Athletics. And then we'll also be having, of course, our Pirate Football playback on either Saturday night or most likely Sunday morning, where we'll talk about the ball game, and someone may join us, be it a Pirate fan or a former player.
And by the way, guys, I want to mention, too, we got an update from our great friend Dana Strength, the travel agent. When people maybe they're concerned about our the cruise is still on. We'll still be going next year to the Bahamas. I know that there were areas of the Bahamas that were bad, but she did say that she feels confident that by the time that we go on the cruise next July the 16th through the 20th, things in Nassau, they'll probably build them back up or what if there is any damage there. But that we are going to continue to do the cruise, so I want to make everybody aware of that, and we'll keep you up to date on that. But we'd love to have you July the 16th through the 20th. Out of Charleston to Nassau. So I want to mention that to folks. If you're wondering about the cruise, it's still on. And she said that if for some reason we couldn't go to the Bahamas, Carnival will honor the cruise, obviously, and we'll go to a different port. We wouldn't go to, say, if things were bad in Nassau. They're not going to, obviously, you're not going to get your money's worth if things are bad. So we would go somewhere else if that's the case. But with the time that they have between now and July, she feels like that they'll be able to, things will be okay and we'll be good to go. So I just want to mention that before we go. You guys have anything else?
That's it. Wrap it up.
We need to tell folks about our social media for sure.
Know about it.
You can go on Facebook, like our Facebook page. Make sure you pick the games. What's the deadline for folks? So I was going to tell people about that.
It's on Friday at noon. Because one of the games we're picking is the North Carolina Wake Forest game, and that's Friday night.
Okay. I just want to make sure to get that very clear. So like our Facebook page, do the pick 'em. We want you to go follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, and Instagram is at TheSportsObjective. Certainly there. And also, guys, where can you hear the podcast?
On SoundCloud, iTunes, or there's no more iTunes. On SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and on
Castbox,
your 1980s
radio.
Boombox.
CastBoxRadio.com. There's all kinds of Himalaya that we added recently.
Nowhere.
Yeah, that's it. Wherever you can hear your podcast and your favorite podcast, you'll be able to pick us up. And a lot of people listen via social media, and definitely links on Hoist the Colors, so you can do that as well. But
yeah, the best damn thing to do, if you're out there listening right now, the best damn thing to do is go like our Facebook page, and you can just click a link. Just click whatever link you want. We post all our podcasts up there. Go like our Facebook page. Go smash the like button. Pretend like it's somebody you don't like's face. and just go smash the hell out of that like button on Facebook.
We don't promote violence on Sports Objective.
Yeah, and as far as the Facebook page, Kyle, that's what it's grown tremendously. That's what just this month alone we have. We're closing in on nearly a new 100 likes and followers just this month. So we're right there, well over 800 now.
All right, guys. Well, I'm very excited about our future and excited about East Carolina's future across the board. Thank you, John Gilbert and Ryan Robinson, all the staff there working their butts off. JJ McLam and everybody, they've been doing awesome. Appreciate you very much. And we'll have our Pirate previews coming out on Thursday, so we'll have that out as well. In the meantime, for Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.